Good afternoon and happy 2022, everyone. Thank you for joining us all today. I am Jennifer Hanna, Deputy Director of the National Healthcare Preparedness Programs, or NHPP branch. Before I hand it over to our first presenter, I would like to provide a brief overview of what we will cover today. Next slide, please. First, Mary Gallagher, the Executive Vice President and Chief of Staff of the Ohio Hospital Association, will present on how her organization used ASPR funding to address personal protective equipment shortages and support Ohio hospitals during the COVID-19 response. Next, I will provide a few ASPR healthcare readiness programs updates. Afterwards, Shane Brandman will highlight some surge and staffing resources available on ASPR Tracy's website. Finally, we will launch a few short polls to solicit your feedback on what topics you'd like to hear or learn more about during our monthly webinars in 2022. I will now pass it over to Mary Gallagher to share how the Ohio Hospital Association has used ASPR funding to encourage statewide collaboration between hospitals, manufacturers, and healthcare partners.
Great. Thank you, Jennifer, and thank you, Megan. I am Mary Gallagher. I'm Executive Vice President and Chief of Staff at the Ohio Hospital Association. I'm joined today with Jim Giuliano. Jim is our Chief Clinical Officer and Vice President of Operations. Jim is really our expert in so many of these areas, so I'm glad he was able to join today. And if you have questions, I'm sure Jim can manage them. But I'm going to take a shot and talk a little bit about some of the unique things that we did early on in the COVID pandemic with the help of ASPR, the support of ASPR funds. But on the first slide, wanted to talk a little bit about just about the Ohio membership. I know I recognize a lot of the names on the screen, so just to put a little context in for you to kind of see where OHA is compared to your state association. We have 250 hospital members, 191 of which are acute care hospitals. And you can see some of our stats. You know, some of the things that's a little different in Ohio is that we do have a little of everything. We have a lot of metropolitan areas. So we have each of which has their own children's hospital. So we have, 10 children's hospitals, 7 of which are freestanding. We have a number of adult high dish hospitals, critical access, about almost 20% of our members are rural. So we have a real wide array of hospitals in our state. And when you see there the ownership, I wanted to point this out too. The majority of the hospitals in Ohio are nonprofit tax-exempt organizations. About 20% of our members are actually Catholic-sponsored hospitals. But a couple of things to note. You see there 24 public or government-owned hospitals. There's a wide range of members within that category. We've got the Ohio State University Medical Center in that category, but we also have very small joint township, district, rural critical access hospitals in that category. So that's a pretty diverse group in that 24. And the other thing I wanted to mention is that we have only 6 full service acute care for-profit hospitals in Ohio. A couple of those are physician-owned surgery centers with overnight beds. A couple others are parts of a national chain hospital corporations, publicly traded, investor-owned. But we really, unlike some states, we really don't have much penetration of a for-profit presence in Ohio. 70% of our members are in systems, and more than half of those are in very large systems, multi-state hospital systems, and 30% of our members are independent. And similarly, revenue and bed size, when you look at the size comparison, we have some very, very small hospitals under $25 million in a year in revenue. And we have some very, very large, well-resourced, over $1 billion, over 500 bed facilities. The Cleveland Clinic would be in that very large size. We'd have Fulton County Medical Center in the very small. So we have a real mix of hospitals. And you know, and they're spread throughout the state. So it's sort of a challenge in disaster work, is that we have such an array, a geographic array, different types of hospitals, different expertise, different service lines. So we have a real mix, and it's made it for an interesting process. If you look at the next slide, a little bit about some of the work we did with COVID, it would look a lot like the other, your state hospital association. You know, we work very closely with the state and the federal government to mobilize quickly to support members. And we did a wide array of things very early in the pandemic. Our state really looked to the OHA staff. We had some folks with some really strong relationships with the governor's office, with our state Department of Health, and we basically embedded our staff with the state. We leveraged the things that we do very well, our clinical expertise and relationships that Jim brought to the table, some of our communications expertise. Robin Hepler on our staff really did an amazing job, and we did public-facing campaigns. We did internal, external communications of all types, and really assisted the state quite a bit in a lot of their COVID communications. Our CEO stood side by side with the director of health and the governor at one of the early press conferences, which at one point were daily, to really bring a lot of the issues, some of those early flatten the curve kind of issues to the public. Today, I'm going to focus on a couple of specific projects that we were able to stand up thanks to the ASPR funds. And one of those, if you on the next slide, you can see we were able to really help the state organize very quickly. We brought an executive advisory group together in hours at the request of our governor to be the governor's key advisors on this issue. And these were hospital CEOs, chief medical officers from all sorts of hospitals, some rural, some teaching. And they developed, kind of helped the governor manage the issues by breaking the state up into three zones. Those three zones each were appointed a zone lead. The Southwest part of the state was actually our board chair last year, Dr. Rick Lofgren from University of Cincinnati, UC Health. We had a physician from the Cleveland Clinic in the northern part of the state, and we have a physician from Ohio State in the zone two there. But we were able to bring people together, and that was something that was really invaluable for the state and the governor, that he could tap the state's clinical experts so quickly, thanks to our facilitation. On the next slide, you can see this is really one of the interesting projects I wanted to talk about, that we really were able to use the ASPR funds to help develop. And we started with this online data repository that our staff stood this up in a matter of a couple of days, very, very quickly, and really building on OHA's data program expertise and our data analytics expertise that many of you have, those, you know, market share data programs. We redeployed all those folks to help us put together this resource tracker. Pretty amazing work. And when you think about it, this is still in place today. It's been up for, you know, a year and a half, almost 2 years now. And we have daily data reporting by our members. Every single Ohio hospital reports. It's near real-time data. And it focused on, you know, our patient counts, inpatients and ICU patients. It also focused on capacity, you know, how many beds are available? What do your ventilators look like? We initially focused on staffing too, and I'll mention that quickly, but and then supplies, PPE particularly, by type. We actually had hospitals reporting to us, and still do every day, how many days of face shields or N95s they have available. We have since let go of that staffing number, because we've found that, and Jim can answer questions on this one. I think we found that the reporting on that was too subjective, and that we were thought it was better, now that we're really seeing a lot of staffing shortages and crunch, we thought it would be better to focus on staff beds. And we've also since added flu data to our resource tracker. But this has all been valuable information. It has helped us early on know who needed ventilators and who had ventilators, and how could we partner the hospitals with the ventilators to send the ventilators to the people who needed them. It was an amazing resource, and again, one that's helped us every day throughout the pandemic. And then on the next slide, you know, I think many of you, you know, when we were able to use the ASPR funds to help particularly our rural hospitals with PPE purchases and some equipment purchases. But you see on the next slide, that resource tracker was able to help us make a lot of decisions and put together some kind of maybe unusual PPE kind of projects. One was to help us put together a hospital PPE virtual stockpile. And this was something that I think a lot of these projects, and I'm sure you have had the same experience, really happened because we have such strong hospital leadership in the state, and hospital leaders who were willing to do the right thing. And, you know, it was a kind of set competitive differences aside, and let's see how we can help. On the hospital PPE virtual stockpile, if you remember, you know, we had such trouble early on accessing PPE through our traditional supply chain markets. And, you know, we had been helping members identify alternative markets, helping with things like PPE conservation and decontamination. If you all remember the, you know, the Battelle N95 decontamination project, we work with Battelle's actually a couple of miles down the street from their headquarters, or a couple of miles down the street from OHA's offices. And we work very closely with them to help get that system up and running and tested and across, you know, distributed across the country. You know, PPE was such an early on, such a crisis topic. But one of the things we were able to do was have each hospital agree to set aside a certain number of pieces of PPE in a virtual stockpile. Physically, the hospitals had the PPE and attested to having the PPE on site at their facility. And but we didn't take it to a common you know, warehouse or anything. We left the hospitals, you know, house their own virtual stockpile. But then we put together a program and a process where hospitals in need, and then also expanded it to nursing homes in need, so they could actually tap this virtual stockpile and get supplies from their neighboring hospitals. And we put into place this process, and this was all really voluntary and flexible. We intentionally kept it kind of out of the hands of the state, so we didn't have to over-regulate and be burdened by a lot of process or that wasn't going to be helpful. But what we did leverage was our local regional hospital coordinators, the local coalitions that had been built between hospitals and nursing homes. And we had hospitals sharing PPE across, you know, down the street to competitors, getting in their cars and driving boxes of gloves or masks down the street to a nursing home that needed them, or sending an infection control practitioner down the street to help the nursing home with some of their infection control practices and doing some quick on the site training for their staff. It was pretty amazing to see everyone kind of rally around this common cause and help each other. And you'd be surprised, there was no pushback on the hospital side for this. Everyone understood the importance of it, the importance of helping each other, sharing equipment, staff, supplies, expertise, support. And it was something that we were able to help with the facilitation. And again, locally, a lot of people just rallied together and worked together. And a lot of those relationships, especially between the hospitals and the nursing homes, were really, some had been well developed, certainly, but others, this was the first time that hospitals and that particular hospital and that particular nursing home had worked together. Jim led a program where we actually assigned every nursing home in the state to a hospital. So some hospitals had, 15 nursing homes. Then they were sort of, this is going to be, Jim will cringe at my term, but it was like a buddy system. And then the hospitals committed to helping when the surge in the crisis was really at the nursing home level. And it helped hospitals too. It helped hospitals help keep those COVID patients out of hospitals when they could be managed in the nursing facility setting. So it made sense to help, but it was a really very unique relationship. And in fact, there were folks at the state who were surprised and couldn't understand, are you sure this is okay? They were really surprised at the level of cooperation. And it was really amazing to see and fun to be with, fun to be part of that. I can see on the next slide, we talk about some of the things that we were able to do, again, with all of the data that we were able to collect from hospitals and continue to collect. I think I've hit most of these. So the kind of the last thing I wanted to mention then on the next one is the work we did with manufacturing industry in Ohio. While all of this was happening, many of these projects, as they did at your associations, they all happened at the same time. And we were, several people on the staff of the association were, running different projects all simultaneously. I had the pleasure of working with the Ohio Manufacturers Association. Who knew, that I was going to become an expert on supply chain and manufacturing. That is something I've never really worked with before in my almost 25 years at OHA. But we worked with the association, the Manufacturers Association, and the Manufacturing Extension that works directly with manufacturers. Jobs Ohio, which is like the economic development arm for the governor and the state, and DAS, Department of Health. We had manufacturers, and I know this was not unique to Ohio, but when the pandemic first hit, everything was shut down. Manufacturers were not getting what they needed to for their materials, for their typical products. So they were coming to us asking, what can we do to help? We have equipment, we have warehouses, we have staff, and all of it's sitting idle. How can we help? So how can we help? How can we repurpose our existing manufacturing capacity to help out in the pandemic? We're hearing about PPE shortages. What can we do? So we brought these folks together, partnered them with some key hospital volunteers to help them with specs and understanding what exactly we needed. And we had Ohio manufacturers of all sorts of products turning around and becoming manufacturers of face shields and masks, now gloves. We didn't, that took a while to stand up, but all sorts of pieces of PPE, gowns was a big one. And it was a really great project because we were able to help the manufacturers who, had equipment sitting unused to kind of restart their plants and get moving to produce domestically what we had been relying on overseas supply chain to provide. And as you all know, a lot of the supply chain, especially supplies coming out of Asia, were trickling or stopped. So it was a really great full service kind of project. We continue to work with these folks. We had for some of the smaller manufacturers, we helped the Manufacturers Association and Magnet stand up kind of an online marketplace where they could advertise and you could directly buy particular pieces of PPE. And again, as you all know, it's cheaper to buy a lot of these products from mass manufacturers overseas. But we had conversations with our board to some of the long-term conversations around domestic manufacturing. And we had our hospital CEOs and health system CEOs talking about how they can buy maybe a percentage of their supply, even as typical supply chains were opening up. How can we redirect some of those dollars, those purchasing dollars, to support domestic manufacturers? And so we continued. I mean, as of last week, we had a domestic glove manufacturer now, again, a product that's very labor intensive and hard to produce and easier to produce in Malaysia than it is in Ohio and in Mansfield. But somehow we have a group that has been able to put together a pretty effective manufacturing operation to produce gloves domestically and in Ohio. And so, but they're more expensive. And so now we have members talking about, you know, it's the right thing to do to have to first support our local economy. They're very interested in doing that, but then they're also interested in having that redundant supply chain in case we ever have another issue where the traditional supply chains break down. So that project certainly was very interesting and again is ongoing and one that came out of necessity, but has a long-term horizon on that. So those were the kind of things I wanted to mention, a couple of the maybe unusual manufacturing and stockpiling projects we did around PPE, and then all of the sort of standard COVID help that we were able to give our members in supporting what they do. And be happy to address any questions, or Jim, if I missed anything, please jump in.
Thank you, Mary. I think that you gave a great overview of our work. And, you know, it was just a matter of adapting to the needs as the pandemic was evolving. And here we are almost 2 years later, still adapting. I know all of my colleagues on the call today are doing the same, regardless of what state they're in. It just was a matter of preempting whatever that new need was going to be and then adapting to it. And I think you articulated that very well. We'd be happy to take any questions.
Well, I will say at the end of the day, I think we were able to bring sort of those association core competencies to the table, you know, facilitation, education, communications, project management. We, you know, all the kinds of things we do every day, we just sort of redeployed our own staff to do those things around pandemic related items. And from that, I think we were able to stretch and grow and sort of build some muscle in some areas for some of our staff that maybe hadn't tried some of those activities before. And then we formed some amazing relationships, got pretty deep within our membership. Jim and the clinical folks really have cemented a bond, I think, that will go on for years and years to come. And then I have to say our relationship with government has really changed. When we're all sort of rowing in the same direction, those relationships have been so positive. And again, another way that we'll use those relationships, enjoy those relationships, and continue into the future, hopefully post pandemic very soon. So Megan, thank you for the opportunity to talk about our projects today.
Sure. Thank you both so much for that presentation. That was wonderful. And we really appreciate you both taking the time today to share all of the great efforts going on in Ohio. We'll go ahead and I'll pass it back to Jennifer Hanna to provide a few administrative updates.
Thank you, Megan. And thank you, Mary and Jim, for that great presentation and overview to see and hear how the ASPR funding has impacted your state. So next slide, please. And I believe next slide. Great, thank you. So I would like to share a few administrative updates with you all. First, we understand that in the new year that some individuals within your organization may have departed, retired, or taken on a new position not affiliated with the management of ASPR cooperative agreement funding. If any of these individuals were assigned a CAMP license, as you know, that CAMP is the system that is used to collect the performance measures, please let us know and we can reallocate the license to someone else in your organization once CAMP is back up and running. To notify us of any changes, please email Kate Gorbeck. A member of our team will share her email in the chat. Second, we wanted to flag that the end of year performance measures will remain largely the same for reporting. And you can review and access the performance measures by going to the ASPR.hhs.gov website and clicking on the performance measures, reports, and guidance tile. A member of our team will also drop the link to the performance measures in the chat for easy reference. I also wanted to take a moment and follow up on a question from last month's webinar regarding the semi-annual federal financial report. After contacting ASPR Grants Management Office, I wanted to confirm there is no semi-annual federal financial report due, which is the reason it is not showing up in the payment management system or PMS. So just want to repeat that there is no semi-annual federal financial report due. So that is the reason it is not showing up in the payment management system or PMS, and this has been confirmed by ASPR Grants Management. Finally, ASPR has officially completed the first phase of its transition from PHE.gov to ASPR.hhs.gov, as shown here on this slide. The new site is now live and showcases ASPR's mission and priorities, along with innovative approaches to fighting COVID-19, healthcare readiness, response operations, medical countermeasures, ASPR's budget and funding, and more. For your reference, a member of our team will share the direct link in the chat. I will now pass it over to Shane Brandman to highlight some useful ASPR Tracy search and staffing resources. Shane?
Thank you, Ms. Hannah. And is it a happy 2022? I don't know, but we're here and we're standing and we've survived. So, and in large part to the fantastic devoted duties of everyone on the line. So thank you on behalf of your communities, your states, and the healthcare professionals that you serve for all your tremendous efforts to date. I'm gonna just take a couple minutes on the next slide. As you know, ASPR Tracy, we're continuing to update and add new resources in an effort to try to support and assist you in your demanding duties, which are varied. Obviously, COVID takes a lot of energy, but there are a lot of other threats and events going on as well. And we respect that and try to support that. But today, we just want to make sure that you have already seen, or if you have any questions about the strategies for managing a surge in healthcare provider demand, that's the first selected resource. We've updated that with a lot of examples of innovative approaches on how to try to manage the healthcare provider demand shortages. It's not a panacea, but it offers some good, tangible ways in order to be able to extend your staff. And if you haven't already taken a look at that, please do. And if you have come up with your own strategies, separate and aside from those that are contained in the document, take a couple minutes and make sure that you send that forward to us so we can share with others and we can continue to improve the resources in this, unfortunately, continued area that seems to be frustrating many across the nation. Second, I just want to point out the Medical Operation Coordination Cell Toolkit. We've updated that second edition. And again, it offers some strategies. Again, for both of these resources, many of you on the line have served as subject matter experts with Tracy in developing these. So thank you for taking time to do that. And if you have other topic areas that you think we need to focus on, please let us know and we'll get to work on those as well. I did want to point out as well on the fourth item here on select new resources, We did a complete exchange series because of the seriousness of this emerging trend of civil unrest and community violence on healthcare. In fact, we'll be doing a webinar, hopefully scheduled sometime in late February, about this very subject. In addition to trying to meet the very demands of healthcare right now, violence is on an upswing, and we want to make sure that we provide tangible training and tangible ways to be able to address these concerns to take care of healthcare professionals in these most challenging times. And lastly, on this slide, I just want to be able to make sure that you check out our webinars and speaker series. Again, we talk about a wide range of aspects like this. Certainly for some of you on the line, the impact of COVID on women and in the healthcare professional field, we did a speaker series on that, as well as the impact it's had on the entire medical education system. You have family and friends that are in their third or fourth year of medical school, you can understand that a lot of the learning they've had to do is on a virtual aspect versus in real time. And then on other aspects, they've had to devote mainly their talents to the COVID response versus getting the wide array of training that they normally would. So again, check out those when you have a few spare minutes. And again, if you have any questions, let us know. Next slide. I do just want to point out a couple things that we're working on that you'll be seeing in the near future. And if you have any desire to assist us as being a reviewer, please email myself or ask Asper Tracy, and we'd love to have you be included on this, is that we are coming out next week with a draft of a climate change resilience that's specifically geared toward healthcare system considerations. So we've worked with a number of folks already on this, and now we'll be opening up to a large array of SMEs to review this, including Jennifer Hanna's staff and our regional staff at ASPR, is to help make that document better. We're hoping to have that posted and completed sometime in February, and I think it will be worth checking out. But again, if you have a specific interest in this area, let me know, and I'll include you on the SME review that's going to start taking place mid next week. And then I think something that goes very well as a companion piece to what our Ohio colleagues talked about, we are working with Nebraska Medicine, Healthcare Ready, HIDA, which is the Distribution Association folks, as well as individuals from NHPP, Critical Infrastructure, and our supply chain tower here at ASPR, is to develop a tool for specifically hospitals to better determine the needs and likely usage during incidents. DASH is what we're calling this. It's called the Disaster Available Supplies for Hospitals. So again, it's a tool that will help you better identify what are your requirements prior to an event. And it's not just for infectious disease, where it's gonna be doing for a number of different aspects. So again, be worth checking out. We're hoping by spring of this year to have some drafts of that out and for you to be able to look at. And like everything Asper Tracy does, nothing's an endpoint. It's always about continual improvement, getting smarter people like you than me involved in this process and helping us continue to tailor and refine so it better meets the needs of healthcare professionals and entities in the days ahead. So, Jennifer and Megan, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today and to so many on the line that I've had the privilege and honor of working with now almost over 20 years, hate to say that. Thank you for everything you do on a daily basis and especially your continued support of Asper Tracy. Megan, back to you, Min.
Thank you so much. We'll give just a couple minutes here. If anybody has any questions, just as a reminder, feel free to submit questions in the chat or raise your hand regarding any resources or anything Shane has mentioned today. So I'll just give a couple seconds for that. All right, so seeing no questions, we will go ahead and move on to the next slide. Thank you so much, Shane, for taking the opportunity to share that. That was incredibly helpful. So as our final topic today, we wanted to go ahead and have a poll before we wrap up to kind of go over the content we covered in last year's webinars and see what was the most helpful for you. And then as we enter 2022, to gauge your opinions and your thoughts on content for these webinars. And so we have two polls and I'll go ahead and release them in just a second. Feel free to select all that apply in these polls. And then if there is an idea that you have that is not in this list, we ask you to just insert that into the chat. So I'll go ahead and launch the first poll. All right. So the first question you will be seeing on your screen right now is which of the webinar topics from the 2021 webinars was the most helpful for your hospital association? And again, take your time and feel free to choose as many as you feel was most helpful. And then please add in the chat anything else. All right, it looks like responses are slowing down, so I'll just give you all a couple more seconds and then, all right. So I'm gonna go ahead and share these results. As you can see, it looks like we, a lot of the sub-recipient and recipient impact stories, those as well as the COVID funding data reporting and analysis were popular topics and you all really appreciated those. So we'll keep that in mind and definitely be sure to include those topics in this year's webinar. Again, if there's any other ideas that come to mind from last year that really resonated, feel free to add those into the chat. And so we'll go to the next slide and I'll launch the second question. So the second question is, which of the following topics would you be interested in hearing more about in 2022? So again, we've listed out a few, but if there's anything else that comes to mind or something that you all feel like would be helpful, feel free to add that into the chat. All right, just a couple seconds left as responses are slowing down. Okay, great. So I'll go ahead and end this poll and share the results. So for this one, it seems like you all do want to be seeing more of those resources for surge as well as workforce capacity. And so we'll definitely keep that in mind and be sure to include if there's anything specific that you all feel would be helpful or you would like to learn more about, please let us know and we would be happy to bring those in. All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. Feel free again to add anything into the chat as you think about it. And we look forward to 2022 and lots of great content. So with that, we'll go ahead and pass it back to you, Jennifer, to handle any general questions.
Thank you, Megan. As stated, we have some time before the top of the hour. So we would like to open the line for any other questions, either for the presenters or for ASPR in general. But first, just want to say thank you for your feedback on those poll questions. I think that's very helpful to give us a retrospective of our past meetings and those topics that are of most interest for this year. So really appreciate that. And then, as stated, if you have any other questions, this is the time for you to ask those.
Jennifer, it looks like there was a question in the chat regarding the performance, final performance measures, when those are due.
Thank you, Megan. I thought that I was monitoring the chat and I completely missed that question. So that's a great question. As you know, the current 12-month budget period ends April 9th of this year, and then performance measures typically are due 90 days after that. So that would be July 9th of 2022. However, we do have the discretion to extend that period out for when the system will be available for those performance measures. But we will announce when the system is open to start collecting the performance measures. But just be prepared, as we stated during the administrative update, the performance measures are going to mostly remain the same. So just familiarize yourself with those. And then we will notify everyone of when the system will open, or rather reopen, in order to collect those measures, and also give you ample time in order to respond. So Megan, I think we have another question here, and it states in the HPP FEP webinar yesterday, I thought you mentioned a due date for this Friday, but I did not catch specifically what it was. If you were on yesterday's quarterly joint HPP FEP recipient webinar, the date that you're probably referring to is the January 31st date, and that is specifically for the HPP cooperative agreement, and that is the deadline or due date for the FY 2020 budget period to our annual progress report. But that date in that particular activity, the deadline, that is specific to the HPP cooperative agreement recipients and does not apply to our hospital association recipients. We'll give you another minute or so to see if we have any other questions coming in through the chat. As a reminder, again, if you would like to ask a question live, you can certainly raise your hand and then your line will be unmuted as well.
Jennifer, this is Shane Bremer from Ask for Tracy. I just want to acknowledge and thank the NHPP team, including your field project officers, your DC team, and your Deloitte team for your tremendous efforts throughout the entire COVID response. I know you're all tired, but you're doing a great job. So thanks for everything you do for us.
Thanks for that, Shane. Of course, you know, it's certainly... you know, as we say all the time, teamwork makes the dream work, and we certainly would be lost without our Ask for Tracy colleagues for the tremendous amount of resources that you and your team develop and have available for all of our stakeholders, as well as all stakeholders at large. And then, of course, to thank all of our hospital association recipients. I know that you have a very tremendous and challenging job before you. I know it was noted before the call started is that it's hard to imagine that we've been at this for almost 2 years, but almost 2 years is here we are. And, you know, just the amount of work the dedication and commitment that all of you have done, and with all of your hospitals as well as the other healthcare related entities. You are to be commended for that. But we know that we continue, that we're not finished yet, and we continue to fight. And I do see a question here about any flexibility on the medical response and surge, medical response surge exercise. And as many may know or may not know, the medical response surge exercise took the place of our coalition surge test, which is specific to our hospital preparedness program. And as I said, the question is if there's any flexibility on the MRCY, as we like to call it. We are still having internal discussions regarding any potential flexibilities regarding MRCY, and we'll be coming out with some information very soon regarding that. So thanks for that question. So I'm not seeing any additional questions, and I want to be respectful of everyone's time. So I think we're going to close, and then certainly you can always send follow-up questions to the HPP mailbox, which is hpp@hhs.gov, if you have some questions that come to mind later. But just want to thank all of our presenters for their time today, and all of you for your active participation in today's meeting. As a reminder, we invite you to share any stories regarding how you or your member hospitals are using ASPR funding to make a positive impact on their communities. We could go to the next slide, please. Great, thank you. So if you have a story to share, please fill out our Stories from the Field submission form or reach out to your field project officer for more information. And a member of our team will drop the Story from the Field submission form link in the chat for easy reference. We look forward to hearing about the great work that you are doing. So have a great day, everyone, and thank you. And we will talk to you next month.